And tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk about the power of mind. That's right. Just how powerful can it be? Mae McCarthy back with us on Coast to Coast. Her book is called The Path to Wealth, Seven Spiritual Steps for Financial Abundance. But there's much more to that when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast since 1982. Mae McCarthy has helped start and grow six very successful companies as large as $100 million in annual revenues, best-selling author, speaker, university lecturer, and angel investor. She serves on business, philanthropic, arts, and university boards. Mae has become very successful by implementing spiritual principles into her ventures, and it's her passion to pass her knowledge on to others. Mae, welcome back to the program.
Oh, George, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I'm looking forward to this. Now, when you bring your thoughts into a board of a business, do they fight you or do they accept it pretty easily now?
You know, I don't have any pushback because everyone has experienced what I experience as part of a tool for success. I just choose to use it. And that is that there are some messages that we get, some gut instincts, some ideas, and some evidence that whatever we're putting our attention on tends to show up, or possibilities, opportunities, steps that we should take tend to show up. What happens is that those of us that use intuition or follow these gut instincts or these strong thoughts end up being seen as exceptions rather than examples. All of us are very, very powerful. We can use systems for success. It's my belief that you can incorporate a system for success that enables your subconscious and your intuition to show up more often to help you.
And Mae, since you've been doing this, of course, you've had some incredible success.
I have had great success, and I've had some really weird things happen. When you turn around and look at the path that you're led on, that's in relation to whatever you've been putting your attention on, it's really uncanny at how you get led step by step by step. I mean, I can remember one time where I was in a business meeting and I had this really strong, vivid thought of my sister, you know, kind of a face in my mind's eye. And I dare say some of your listeners have probably had that happen. Well, since I've been practicing this routine, as Inc. and Forbes call it, they call it a routine, a morning ritual to prime your brain for success. And since I've been practicing it, I knew that meant I needed to contact her. So I finished with my meeting, and I stopped by her office, and she was really happy to see me. She had a computer problem that I could help fix for free. And so as I'm sitting there at her desk fixing this problem, she noticed this very, very small dot on the outside of my right leg. And that was through nylons, okay? This was back then. And she asked me what it was. I told her that it was a freckle. I was born and raised in Hawaii. Yeah, I have a lot of freckles. I'm fair, and I have lots and lots of freckles. It's very, very, very small. And she said she didn't feel that it was a freckle and asked if I'd see her dermatologist. Many of us come up against those kinds of things where we just know that is exactly what we say it is. And I was just about to tell her, don't worry about it. I know what that is. It hasn't grown. I've seen it for years. It's always been there. And right when I was about to do that, my gut hurt. And a lot of your users have felt that as well. They've had this gut instinct, this something that's trying to get their attention. And so I knew that, well, I've been practicing this a while, so I better go see the doctor. Even the doctor said it was nothing to worry about. Said, Mae, it's too small. It can't be anything. Just go home. And the same thing happened, George. As I was sitting there thinking about his advice, my gut started hurting again.
Mm-hmm. See?
So I said, you know, doctor, I don't mean to be disrespectful. I really don't. My dad was a surgeon. He told me that doctors know more than I do, and I should always do what a doctor says. But you need to cut that off. I came back a week later, George, to a diagnosis of cancer, malignant melanoma, Clark's level 3. And it's my belief that because I was focusing every single day on my gratefulness for being healthy, before I was ever diagnosed as healthy, every morning I have this daily meeting with whatever that inner wisdom is, and I write out statements that describe what I want a future condition to be, whether it's great health, increase in business success, right relationships, and even for, you know, peace in our world. But I write that out every single day as gratitude statements, and then stuff just happens through strong thoughts, through other people, through gut instincts, that makes whatever I'm putting my attention on happen.
When you wrote the book, The Path to Wealth, which was, I believe, almost a couple of years ago, that's when we were first had you on, I think, right?
Right, and I have a new book since then.
That's right. And tell us the name of it.
It's called The Gratitude Formula.
And that, of course, changes people's lives when they act differently, doesn't it?
Well, what ends up happening is what I learned after writing The Path to Wealth and going all over the world and meeting thousands and thousands of people who have had good success simply by using the power of their mind, by focusing their words, thoughts, and emotions on what they want the outcome to be rather than what the rest of the world is telling them to focus on. I wrote the gratitude formula because people were having great success in achieving the goals and in achieving the outcomes that they were putting their attention on for the outcomes that they believed were possible. But many people have goals that they don't believe are possible, that are bigger than anything that they've experienced before or different than anything they've experienced before. And what happens is those beliefs end up overriding the system for success. So I wrote the gratitude formula to really help people shift their beliefs to be on par with what it is that they want. You know, so many people wake up every morning, they pick up their mobile device, they get online with the computer, they turn on the news, and they start programming their mind to look for evidence of whatever they've put into it happening. So when I see this pattern of people putting this, well, I guess some people call it a collective consciousness, but when you put millions and millions of people's thoughts, emotions, and words on anything, you're going to get a shift. And so my advice to people is, you know, first thing in the morning, put your words, thoughts, and emotion, use that power of your mind, and put your attention on the things that you want as an outcome rather than what everybody else wants as an outcome.
We've got a guest. His name's Joseph Gallenberger. He's written a book called Liquid Luck. And what it was an experiment in Las Vegas with a group of people with the kinds of attitudes and mental mind that they used going in. And he said the success rate was astronomical with positive thinking.
Right, right. So if you are framing... Now, it's interesting that this comes up because my husband is finishing a doctoral dissertation on positive framing. And if you frame something with gratitude as though it's already complete, where you really get clear on describing the outcome that you want to achieve and you really get emotional about it even, you're writing it down, you're reading it out loud, you're using a technique that professional athletes use, which is to see yourself in that completed goal. If you use all of those things on a daily basis, what happens is things throughout the day start to illuminate themselves and make it obvious for you to take some steps. And when you're trying to shift beliefs, repetition is incredibly important. You know, I love to tell people that repetition reaps rewards. And lots of famous people from Muhammad Ali, Oprah Winfrey, and even some great wise sages from the 18th and 17th centuries said that when you repeat something over and over and over, you start to notice more evidence of it occurring in your life. One of the greatest motivational speakers who I have grown up on and absolutely love, Earl Nightingale, says the same thing. If you program your subconscious, if you use that power of your mind and program it on a repetitive basis with what you want outcomes to be, you will start to notice more opportunities to take steps to achieve it. I mean, think about if you ever bought a car, mm-hmm. or the last car that you bought, you might have thought about it. You talked to your friends and family about it. You maybe it even woke you up in the middle of the night because you were dreaming about driving it. Then you went and test drove it. Don't you start, George, to see that car driving
around? It's almost like you manifest it.
You do. Your subconscious is so powerful. It filters out all those cars that are driving around on the road, and it almost puts a little spotlight on just the ones that are relating to your goal, which you have used repetition to describe on a daily basis.
May, this is an amazing formula. Now, what if someone is negative during this whole process? We are human. We're subject to ups and downs in life. So what if they can't contain the positiveness and they get negative? What happens?
Right. No, it's really interesting because there's been some great research, really great research that talks about your subconscious. There was one article that I love that was published by a PhD named Matthew James, and it was called Conscious of the Unconscious. And the article goes on to describe his research, and what they determine is that your subconscious doesn't understand terms like I can't or I don't want. So if you say, I don't want to be in debt, your subconscious sees a picture of you being in debt, or I can't possibly, be in a good relationship. Your subconscious doesn't see can't. All it sees is the picture of you being in an unhealthy relationship. And it will show you evidence of continuing to be in debt, to continuing to have the negative experience that you're proclaiming that you don't want to have. And I proved this with one of my salespeople. I've had hundreds and hundreds of salespeople that have worked for my companies over the years. And I had this one salesperson that was always at the bottom of the quota list. And so I had a little conversation with her, and I said, you know, what's going on? You've been trained just the same way. You're a friendly person. You're really nice. You're articulate. What's going on? She goes, well, you know, I don't want to make a bad impression with customers, and I think I freak out a little bit, and I don't want to be late. I don't want to make a bad impression, and I find that these things are happening to make me arrive late to my appointments. You know, I'll get in a terrible backup of cars, some traffic that I wasn't anticipating, and then I'll be late and I'll make a bad impression. Or I don't want my competition to achieve the sale. I want to achieve the sale. I don't want them to. So she's using all these terms of I don't want to be late. I don't want my competition to achieve the sale. I don't want to make a bad impression with these customers. And what's happening with those statements is her subconscious is making a picture of being late, making a bad impression, and not achieving the sale.
Have you found that using these techniques changed your life dramatically in all ways?
Yeah, I did, in terms of business success especially, because business people are designed to always be looking at future projections. You know, when we look at our business, we're not looking at it for just today. We're looking at what is it going to accomplish 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year, 3 years from now. And we are constantly creating sales projections. And my first business was at 19 years old. So I would get so excited and jump up and down. And I was so happy when we would meet our sales projections. And I started to accumulate some proof, George, that we could, in fact, be successful. So I started to be grateful and excited about achieving the future goals, the future sales projections. And as I was doing that, I found that we had all of these innovative and creative ideas that we could implement that I hadn't thought of before. I mean, sometimes it was one of the people that worked for our company that came up with a great idea. Sometimes I had one. Sometimes I'd read an industry article out of how many industry articles that are out there that gave me some insight on some steps to take. But things started to show up that made that future sales projection happen with greater ease. And so I just started applying that same thing in every other area of my life. And, you know, one of my goals that I write about every day is that I live a charmed and easy and joyful life. And it keeps showing up to be charmed and easy and joyful.
Now, though, is it difficult or hard for people to get into this mode?
I think it's really easy. In both of my books, I describe making a commitment to set aside about 25 to 30 minutes every single morning. You're having a goal planning meeting, a subconscious programming meeting to cultivate that power of your mind every single morning with yourself. And you will sit quietly, write out goals that you have in every major area of your life. Just take, 10 minutes and write down some goal statements that describe what your future life looks like. I'm so grateful that I have a wonderful job where I use my skills and talents in remarkable ways, and my company appreciates me, and I'm rewarded with a minimum or more of X number of dollars. And I have a very financially free life. That might be one example. But have a goal, at least one goal, in every major area of your life, your finances, your relationships, your recreation, your use of skills and talents in fulfilling and satisfying ways. Whatever your goals are, even in your health, by all means, your health.
And if you pull that black cloud over your head, though, every day, it's not going to work for you, is it?
If you pull the black cloud out of your head, somewhere, something fueled that cloud. And is it because you're waking up first thing in the morning and turning on devices? Is it because you're around people who are constantly telling you that you're worthless? Whatever it is, spend 51% of your time every day doing what I describe, and you will shift those beliefs. Those clouds will begin to part. I just know it. I've seen it. It works. Your mind is that powerful. People have proved that they can use systems to succeed. I mean, think about when you learn to ride a bike or read or drive a car. You weren't an expert the first day, but what you did was you used repetition to practice. In addition, that repetition was also programming your subconscious. It was programming your mind to see the small successes that it was possible.
All right, stay with us, May. We're going to take a quick break, then we're going to come back and take some phone calls with you. The latest book with May McCarthy is called The Gratitude Formula, talking about using this power within you. And welcome back, May McCarthy with us. Her book is called The Gratitude Formula, a 7-step success system to create a life that you love. How many people, May, do you think would love to change their life?
I think we are in a society where we're always comparing ourselves to other people. So I would say that it's got to be over 80%.
80%.
Somebody's got something that we want to experience. And so people will always be searching for something that will change them to be on more on par with what they think they might like to have.
And that formula is pretty standard, isn't it? a better job, relationship, things like money, stuff like that?
I believe that, George. I think that people, especially, you know, it's funny, my husband and I decided that we wanted to get rid of the moss growing on the north side of our bodies during the winter in Seattle. So we chose to move just for the winter months. And it's really interesting when you start to make a goal to be a bit warmer in the winter and a bit drier, how many things show up that you never noticed before, and how many people are already doing what you wanted to. And then it becomes a game of, well, let's see, these people went to this state, these people went to this state, these people went to this state and live in this community, and you start to compare all of their realities with formulating your own. So I think people are always in a position of trying to compare and to change things in their lives.
And when you say success is a system, not a secret, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's my belief that people have already proved how powerful they are. They've used systems for success to accomplish some incredible goals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just think about a little kid who tries to learn to walk. I mean, every single day, they're doing something on a repetitive basis. They're seeing other people walk, and so they start to walk. When they learn to read, when they learn to ride a bike, or even type on that crazy keyboard that's not even in alphabetical order, they had to put in some effort on a repetitive basis to learn how to do that. And they did one other thing. They looked at other people that were already successful in accomplishing what they wanted to do. When they started out riding a bike, they probably crashed like I did many, many times. But they were encouraged because other people were riding bikes around them successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to shift their belief into possibility. Essentially, they started to think, wow, if they could do it, I could do it. And that helped them, along with repetition, to get to the point where they could accumulate some proof that they were making progress. And that fueled their motivation so they didn't give up.
I remember.
And it's my belief, in my experience, that we can use that same kind of system for success in any goal that we have.
I remember my mother teaching me how to ride a bike. It was a two-week process, May. And she would run along next to me, not ride, run along next to me, holding the back seat of the bike so it wouldn't fall over, giving me the balance I needed. And then when she thought I was at a point where I could do it, she let go, and off I went. And it was exhilarating, and it was fun. And the only problem I had was I didn't know how to stop because I thought, if you stop, you're going to fall. And so you have to keep going. And I wouldn't stop. And then she finally, I had to come around back and back, and she caught me and stopped the bike and then taught me about, you know, stopping the bike and then putting your foot down and stuff like that. But what's funny in life, and the old saying is, when you do something over and over again and you come back to it years later and you do it again, they always say it's just like riding a bicycle.
That's right. So you proved that you can use a system for success. You use repetition to practice. You knew that probably some of your friends or family were riding a bike successfully. So you thought, well, if they could do it, I could figure out that I could do this. Somehow I can figure this out. Mom's going to help me. And you didn't give up. And so every time you thought about not being able to ride a bike, you were able to dismiss that thought easier and easier every day as you accumulated proof that you could do it. Now, so many people will have a really big goal that they've never experienced before. It's different than anything that they've experienced before, and they start to feel like a fraud for even wanting it.
Yeah.
And in my book, I describe this situation that really affects a lot of people, and I call it the fraud factor. because they'll be thinking about and talking about a goal that they want, but then they give up too early because they just don't see the possibility of achieving it. And that feeling of being fraudulent, of it not being possible, overrides them and really does a number on getting them to abandon their goal. And so a lot of people do that. And I advise people, don't give up. Don't give up. There's some certain, there's things you can do that you've proved how powerful you've been in the past using to achieve your goals. You do the same thing with these bigger goals. Just a great example is I have a woman friend of mine who's a scientist. She works for a cancer research organization, and she decided that in addition to lots of other goals, she wanted to be a singer and get paid for it. And I was a little concerned. I said, are you even any good at singing? And so she sang for me, and sure enough, she's
okay, huh?
And so she was using this daily practice that I described, this daily goal attainment strategy, and writing all that out. And after about 2 months, she said she was giving up on the goal. She hadn't gotten any intuitive insights to take steps, and she felt like fraud. So when I started asking her a little bit about, you know, singing and her growing up and things like that, what I learned was that she had actually told her parents when she was younger in high school that she wanted to be a professional singer. And they and her siblings and other family friends and neighbors all told her that that was a stupid idea, that it couldn't afford a secure lifestyle, and that what she needed to do was buckle down, get a good degree, and have a job that provided her with some security.
Good point.
What we learned in that was that she had a belief that singing was okay for a hobby, but not okay to get paid for. So what I asked her to do, in addition to doing, you know, her goal attainment practice every morning, I asked her to go out and see if she could meet some singers that were getting paid, and to read some stories about singers that were getting paid and learn what their journeys were. And she started to do that, and shifts happened in her subconscious. Her brain started to believe that it was possible that there were lots of different places that could pay her to sing, and that it was possible to make some money doing this. And one day she was at one of those glorious research organization fundraisers at some giant mansion, and she noticed this trio over in the corner entertaining the crowd, and she kind of scooted over and watched them. And it was a woman singer and two musicians. And it was right then that she had this picture that she could be that woman, that that was possible, and that that woman was getting paid to be there. Right when that happened, it was like her brain took those intuitive messages off mute, and she started to get all sorts of ideas. And she ran into people almost, you know, serendipitously. They were just showing up out of the blue to guide her and direct her. And another event showed up, and three people had asked her to go to it, so she did. And at that event, she met a guy who had been asked to put on a community program and had a budget for entertainment. She auditioned, got her first paying job.
All right, let's take some calls here for you. Let's go to Doug in Parlin, New Jersey to get things started. Douglas, go ahead.
Yes, good evening, George. How are you tonight?
Thank you, Doug. Good.
I'm glad to hear that, and I'm very glad to be able to speak with your guest here. We were speaking earlier about the mind and how you could almost will things to a point. Well, I've got two. First, I want to make a statement, and then I want to ask you a question. The
sure.
First statement is... I learned at a very young age that if I was drawn to something, for whatever reason, these things became drawn to me. I got into fishing at a young age, and I was introduced to a couple of old fishing lures, and people started telling me about how much the antique lures were worth and whatnot. And I never seen them around. A few years later, I decided maybe I should start collecting them. And out of nowhere, they started popping up. Relatives would say, "You fish, don't you? Here's a tackle box somebody had given to me." I would open it up. It would be beautiful vintage lure still in the box from the 20s and 30s. And I was amazed at just, you know, me thinking about this, and now it's starting to pop up. Not much longer after that, I started getting involved with a few other things, like especially music, blues. And there was some old albums that was just almost impossible to find. And I'd walked into a yard sale, and I said to the guy, "You got any old instruments, guitars or banjos or things like that?" He said, "No, but I got a bunch of old records over there if you want." So I looked through them, and sure enough, some of the hardest blues albums that you could possibly find, there they were, right, you know. And this is just something that I always thought about that I would like to have, but it's almost impossible to find, and I'm coming across this stuff for $1, $2 and whatnot. And it was, it's almost as if, you know, as if I willed it. You know, just thinking about it, it came into my possession. And the second thing I wanted to say about the group mind, I had, for years, followed around a musical group. And we had, on several occasions, some very strange situations. Now, the thing was that the entire group that was there for the audience themselves, between the numbers from 35 to up to 50,000, is a group that would fill out stadiums. It's the Grateful Dead, as a matter of fact. And there were nights when it would be where the audience would almost go into a trance. There wouldn't be a sound in the audience. The band would be playing.
Yeah.
And it would be as if all 35 or 40,000 people at one time, because their mind was all on the same song that they were playing at that time, and everybody was concentrating on the same thing, that, I mean, you could almost literally see the magic in the air. You could tell you were part of something much bigger than yourself, and it was people would just look over, for, you know, someone you didn't even know would just look over you and smile and give you a nod or a wink of the eye, like, you know, you know what's going on here too, don't you? Yeah, and it's like, yeah, I think I do, you know what I mean? And afterwards, you'd leave the show, and everybody would say, "Hey, how about during the second set when, you know, this and this happened?" And everybody was like, "Was that incredible?" But it was kind of like a vampire almost, whose reflection you couldn't see in a mirror. It just didn't show up on the live tapes. But it was there, and everybody who was at those shows and they're fortunate enough to experience Jerry Garcia at his best, and his improvisational ability was capable of really going ahead and you know, being transformed to this place.
It was electrifying and probably magnetic, too. And I guess collectively sometimes, May, can things get done that way, too?
Absolutely. There's something that happens every New Year's Eve day, which is at 4 o'clock in the morning in Seattle. So it'd be 6 o'clock in the morning in Texas and so on and so forth around the world. At exactly the same hour on December 31st, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people get together and they do this world meditation. And the reason I bring it up is because at exactly the same time, they're all focusing on exactly the same thing, and they're reading the names of countries. Well, some scientists decided that you can measure energy in our world. You know, you can measure seismic activity and things like that. And during that hour, it's been documented that the energy level changes when all of these people are focused on the same thing at exactly the same time. We're a lot more powerful than most people think.
It's an incredible machine, isn't it, that we possess?
It is. It is. Yes. And we can use it for whatever we want to or don't want to. I mean, if we're focusing on, maybe you've heard those stories from people where they said, you know, "I was so worried about breaking my leg," or "I was so worried about this one thing happening. I was worrying about it and thinking about it and seeing, you know, how awful this would be, or I was planning for that worst case scenario just in case." And then they experience it. You've met people like that who will think about the worst case scenario and then it actually happens in their lives. Or they're saving for a rainy day and the rainy day always comes. So I always ask people, you know, instead of saving for a rainy day, call it saving for a vacation or saving for a cool home improvement or addition, but call it something that has a name so that you aren't always experiencing a disaster.
Exactly, like the emergency fund or something like that. May, stay with us. We're going to come back and take more calls with you as the lines are just all lit. May McCarthy with us. Her latest book is called The Gratitude Formula. Her website is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com.